Welcome back, Radio DePaul listeners. You're listening to Radio Scrawl, your connection to all things writing at DePaul University. Today, we are back with Kate, myself, and Michelle Ledbetter. And I think first up for our second half, we're going to be talking about our word of the day.
Who are you?
Oh, sorry. My name is Brennan Peterson.
Thanks, Brennan, for doing that intro.
My favorite Pokemon is Pikachu.
Isn't everybody's?
I don't know.
I think everybody's is, right?
He's so our word of the day.
Okay. Jeez. You're like, gotta go. Okay. So we have two words of the day.
Tyrion, Rhine, but they are connected. They're linked.
Okay. It's a phrase.
Yes.
Tyrion is an adjective. Rhine is a noun.
Correct.
Okay.
Our first hint is that together they are a movie title. The definition of the words is a movie title.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So like a Tyrion Rhine is like another way to say a movie title, basically.
Yes.
When did this movie come out?
Yeah, you tell us anything about the movie.
I already gave you your hint.
Okay, fine. In case you guys want to guess, you can text us 773-325-7341 or you can tweet at us #scrawlradio. I don't have any other witty way to reach us like Ryan usually comes up with.
I like carrier pigeons.
Yeah, that's a good one.
They couldn't swipe in to get down here.
The carrier pigeons don't have swipe access to Radio DePaul. So we'll have to rethink that one. Who has swipe access that we could give it to? Let's just think of an online one. I liked Club Penguin. Neopets, hit me up on my Neopet forum. What the
We're gonna let that
definition
one
is? I love Neopets. All right, Tyrion Rhine, do you have a... Your guess was like, didn't you say statesmanship or something?
It's got to be some kind of political something movie. Like congressional debate. I'm sure it's got to be...
A Tyrion Rhine.
The only political movies I can think of are all journalism movies like Spotlight, All the President's Men, nothing like super congressional.
I'm assuming the movie title is two words, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's just, is it like a literal translation?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's like an English to English translation.
It's going to make me really mad because you're going to say the movie title and I'm going to be like, why didn't I
think of it? Is it a movie that we should know?
Yeah.
Dang. Okay.
I'm going to have to let this marinate.
Marinating in... The stew that is your brain.
The stew of my subconscious.
All right, great.
Great. All right. So we were just talking about debate. We're talking about the student submitted bill process of congressional debate. Thanks for all that info, Brandon.
Happy to oblige.
Brandon Peterson.
That's not my name.
Yeah, but you always say that that's how you say it.
That's how you spell
That's how you spell it. Okay. Peterson. What's your Twitter handle? @bpeterson007.
Correct.
Follow us all on Twitter. Just kidding. Michelle doesn't have a Twitter. Anyways, Michelle has done a little clippity clip for us. Last week, it was about Writers Guild, which is a writing group here at DePaul that we host.
Last
in
week,
the
it was
Center.
About one of our Writers Guild's facilitators' poetry.
Yes. Correct.
Yes.
Which she brings to Writers Guild.
Yes.
Theoretically. So Michelle's clippity clip this week is about actually a different Writers Guild member.
Yes. We have Michael Van Kerkhove. I don't know how to say his name now. And he is going to be talking about Live Lit. So we thought it fit into this show well because he writes it at first as well, just like debate. And then, you know, he has certain strategies that he uses in his Live Lit to...
Perform it.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it to the
that
stage.
Would be different than the written page.
Yeah, so this is like live storytelling, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's nonfiction.
All right. And where did he do this at?
This was at Are You There, God? It's Me, which was Monday, April 11th.
Okay.
And it's called Silencing the Creeks. But he also read at Essay Fiesta last Monday or this past Monday.
He's a busy bee as well.
And he will be doing another one May 11th.
That's Flicklit.
Flicklit, yeah.
We were just talking about that last night at Writers Group, 6 to 7:30.
Yeah, like Writers Guild on Facebook.
And
we always share these fun events.
Amazing. All right, so here's Michelle's little clippity clip. Take a listen.
In Chicago means walking along Lake Michigan, layered and wool Irish capped, noticing the return of pink skin on guys in running shorts, like spying the season's first robin. all while listening to Dar Williams, The Beauty of the
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself as a writer and a live storyteller?
Well, I have a theater background. I have did a theater performance major at Western Michigan University, graduated in 1997. I was also a double major in English, so I took a lot of poetry classes and some fiction classes and also playwriting. And I felt like playwriting was my way to combine, you know, kind of the theater world and the writing world.
November 1995, my belated 21st birthday letter. My grandmother, my father's mother, suggests we have a talk while I'm home for the Thanksgiving.
We heard some parts of your story from last Monday that you read.
Okay.
But why don't you give like a quick summary and the title of that?
Yeah. The original title is Silencing the Creeks. I actually wrote that back in 2005, originally, for a Newtown Writers show. And the theme for this, Is This a Thing, that I did was Are You There, God? It's Me. A play on Judy Blume, but also we could go into, you know, topics of religion and things. So a lot of these shows that have themes, you know, it's pretty much just a starting point, and it's great to see how different people riff on those themes. So it's like, okay, what am I gonna do? It's kind of a loaded topic, whichever way I decided to go. So I decided to dust off the story, and you know, stuff has happened since 2005, so I thought I'd readdress it.
Cast of damsels, villains, and heroes. My mother is next to me. My grandmother is on stage as Molly Loveless, wife of a gold rush sheriff, described in the script as more sinned against than sinning.
Then we wanted to know more about what it was about.
Yeah, okay. What was the title last week?
Silencing the Creeks.
Silencing the Creeks.
And that had to do one of the stories I talk about within the story about my grandmother. And you know, she was a very strong Catholic, and it was like my questioning things and then coming out, and all of these things were intertwined. And it really focused on our relationship. And this ghost, or the story that she would read to me and my brother, was this little book about Georgie, this little ghost who his family decided to one day oil all the doors in their house. So when he would haunt the house, the doors would stop creaking. So, you know, it was really like, what's the point? And so he went off in search of other houses to haunt, but they were already taken by other ghosts. And you know, so it's like, what's a fella to do? What's a ghost to do who can't haunt and be himself? You know, it's totally metaphoric, you know. You know, so I kind of, that was the central, you know, image of the original story, and that's still part of where it is now, this version, but there's some other stuff involved.
My favorite painting is John Singleton Copley's Watson and the Shark. Colonial era shark infested harbor, men on a small boat, and one Mr. Watson floating.
Or how do you find that your writing's different from when you are meant to be reading it aloud versus someone reading it on the page? Like, if you had written this piece to submit it to a journal or a magazine, how or if it would have been different?
Honestly, I don't think it would have been that much different.
Okay.
You know, and I do some of the things that I've done out loud or written for shows, I've submitted and they've been published online or whatever. I mean, I always, regardless whether I'm going to read it out loud or, you know, or ideally I have it memorized at these things. You know, a lot of times people are reading or it's memorized. In a perfect world, I am memorized, but often there's just not enough time for that.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I, you know, always read things out loud, even if it's for something I'm writing for, if it was for classwork here at DePaul, or if it's something I'm submitting for a print,
mm-hmm.
you know, thing. I'm always reading it out loud and listening to the sounds and listening to the poetry and making sure I don't run out of breath, so that I tend to, my sentences can get a little unwieldy and long. So it's like, okay, let's, you know, chop these up a little bit or give myself room to breathe. But I feel like, yeah, I feel like there's still a certain poetry in the stuff that I write for reading out loud or sharing out loud or for written.
Well, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
The closest thing to God that I have heard is when I knew I did not have the final word.
Awesome. What a cool clip.
Yeah.
I loved it.
It was great. It was so much fun to talk to Michael about it, too.
Yeah, and it's cool because I see him every week at Writers Guild, so like to hear him on the radio is super cool, to hear him doing his little live storytelling. Also, shout out to Robert, who edited that clip. That it sounded great. Awesome, mm-hmm. right? Weaving it in and out of the storytelling.
Our producer, Robert.
Shouts out. But yeah, that was a super cool way to... He was kind of like a guest on the show, but like... Not on it. Just like
thanks, Michael.
Jen was. Shout out to Michael if he's listening too.
Yeah.
All right. So going along with that theme of like great question to ask Michael if he does anything differently when he's writing for the page versus writing to do these live storytelling events. Because I feel like even in your head, you got to be thinking like, I'm going to present this to an audience. You know, how are they going to be reacting to my words? Bringing it back to Brendan. What do you do to make sure that like, I mean, I guess your debate, you're kind of saying it was like improv, right?
Yeah, there's a really big aspect, like we mentioned earlier, freestyling. We don't like scripts. We don't like, talking points and just kind of stale preaching to the choir. We try to make it a conversation more than anything else, which is, I think,
that's
what
pretty cool,
probably
yeah.
make it as different from this live storytelling as it is. The biggest part with giving extemporaneous speeches, sorry. I use speeching all the time. It's fine. The biggest thing is knowing that your audience is listening to pretty policy heavy and like data oriented speeches, but you have to make sure they can understand it.
Yeah.
And the problem with like a policy paper, or not the problem, but the difference between a policy paper and a policy speech is that a policy paper you can reread and you can go back, you can look at statistics and charts and like you can visualize information in that way and like see the argument that they're making. But in a debate speech, you don't have that luxury. You just have your voice and the way you present information like that.
So your audience has to figure out your argument just from the one sentence they hear at a time.
Basically, just thesis at a time and breaking it down from that. So what I always tell my speakers or my debaters is that you have to pretend or assume that your audience is stupid, not for any kind of like competitive edge reason, but like it's really difficult to dilute these really intense policy ideas or even philosophical moral arguments that you're making when you're just hitting it thesis, evidence, and then that's it, my speech. You know, you need to kind of put it on a silver platter and then like shove it in their face for a little while.
I definitely think that's true for writing papers even. You have to assume that even though your professor is going to know what you're talking about, you still have to present it so clearly that they can dissect your argument super easily.
Exactly. You don't want them to have to reread in a paper in general, certainly. Not for most papers anyways. You don't want to give them the opportunity. I think that's the biggest difference between academic writing and just essay writing is that academics assume that everyone reads like academics, or at least only academics are going to be reading this.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have like just the most dense ideas presented and shammed in there.
I think that was like a jammed and a shoved.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for
the linguist Brenton.
I told you.
Creating new words on air.
I'm a poofed up linguist.
That's a terrible phrase.
Yeah. but yeah, so it's all about conversational.
Dialogue. Because then you're taking those bills and you pick sides, right? You said the pro and the con, positive, negative.
Pro con, yeah.
Okay. And then that's what you meant by like, you got to present your argument like this is good bill. And then here's my evidence to show you good bill.
Right. A huge part of that comes down to like you can throw statistics up into the air. You can bring up various theses. We'll go with thesis. Okay. I'll take that.
Same.
you can give all this hard data example and argument like diluted, whatever. But the most important part is really explaining what you mean by your speech or what this bill could mean for the world, for American taxpayers, whatever, however you want to contextualize it.
Yeah.
So if I can make a speech that points at my opponent's bill and says, this bill would actually kill puppies, that's a huge deal. Because you're not just saying like, well, it's ineffectual and oh, well, this could be better. It's like, no, this bill could actually kill puppies. Now, I haven't been able to make that speech yet.
You're waiting for the opportunity to arise. I'm waiting for it.
But in the meantime, you want to paint this picture of, like, what could be. And that's probably similar to live storytelling. You're telling a story about this bill. You're telling a story about what it really means to make legislative decisions on behalf of 300 million Americans.
Wow, yeah.
And
not that that's a big deal or anything.
Nah, who cares? But storytelling is such a big part of that, which is why I think it's so cool to have, like, the literary vocalizations of...
Brendan's doing the finger guns. I wish y'all could see guns, it.
Like up and over to Michelle across the table. Computer, there's a monitor here that I can't see her over.
Cool. Literary storytelling, debate storytelling, academic storytelling.
All about making connections here at the Writing Center.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Great conversation. I feel like I learned so much about debate. Maybe I'll join it.
So many people jazzed about your competition this
so
weekend.
Many people
I bet
jazzed.
You're gonna fill up those 4 Amtrak tickets.
We have 4
Michelle,
Amtrak
you
tickets.
Go?
Sorry, I have to work.
Oh, good excuse. Me too, actually. All right, so we got our words of the day. Tyrion and Rhine.
Tyrion, Rhine.
Tyrion, Rhine. Even though it's 2 different words.
But they work together. The phrase
they
as
work
a
together.
Whole is a movie title.
Movie title.
And remember, the parts of speech are adjective, noun.
Text us 773-325-7341. If you want to give us a guess, you can tweet at us, hashtag... Scrawl Radio.
Head up our Neopets.
Toontown. I used to play Toontown all the time.
And we will swipe in your pigeons if they arrive. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it